Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Folks, we're going to visit with Dr. Joe Cantor, State Health Officer for the state of Louisiana, for our weekly coronavirus update. Doc, we hope that you had a nice vacation last week. I think that's where you are.
Yeah, thank you, Noah. I did. We got away to visit some family we haven't seen in a long time. So it was nice to do that. I'm glad to be back here. Glad to be back with you.
Well, thank you, sir. So where do we stand this week?
Well, we're doing okay. We could use some more vaccinations. But as far as the virus goes, we've more or less been holding steady for the past really 3 or 4 months. Percent positivity this week is down just a tick from 3.2 to 3.1%. Hospitalizations continue to be below 300 people hospitalized for COVID statewide. We've been below 300 for the past month now. That's reassuring. So we're doing well. The vaccination program has slowed. There's no question about that. We've got about 37% of Louisianans having initiated the series, about 32% having completed the series. We clearly trail behind national benchmarks for those numbers. But, you know, we still get more and more every day. So the campaign's not over, and we're trying to get vaccine in smaller locations, medical clinics, smaller community events. And that work will continue, you know, going forward.
Doc, has there been an effort to try and identify the underlying reason for the vaccine hesitancy here? I mean, we were going strong there for a while, and as you and I have talked over the past several weeks, all of a sudden, boom, we hit this plateau and we can't seem to get off of it.
Yeah, the best that we can tell is it's really multifactorial, and some of these barriers are more easily addressed than others. You know, initially, we were just limited by supply, and that was the real chokehold. That's clearly gotten better now. We had access issues. People couldn't get to a vaccine site. They couldn't make an appointment online, needed help. And we've been able to address those. There's a 1-800 number that people can call in now 7 days a week. It's up until 8 p.m. If they don't have good internet access, they can actually have the appointment made for them. You can now get a free Uber or Lyft ride to any vaccine site. You can actually have someone come to your home and do it in your home if you're homebound. So a lot of the access issues have been mitigated. There's still these really pervasive myths that have been hard to combat. Myths about fertility that are not true. Myths about, microchips and conspiracy theories and everything else. And those have been really hard. We've talked about this before. When we've done focus groups, and this matches with national polling, amongst people who have yet to be vaccinated, yet to have chosen to be vaccinated, even amongst those individuals who harbor a deep mistrust of the system, of government, even if they don't like doctors in general, they still tend to put a lot of stock into what their own doctor advises for them. And that's what we're trying to leverage now. So we're trying to really activate the physician community, encourage physicians to talk about the vaccine at any clinical encounter, whether it's related to vaccines or not, and to consider stocking the vaccine themselves so that they can offer it then and there. I think this is part of a necessary normalization of the COVID vaccine. In time, the COVID vaccine is just going to be another vaccine that people get, like every other vaccine that they get. It's going to be normalized, and we're in that transition process right now, moving from these, you know, high-volume, high-throughput sites that are special and new into a more normal means of getting people vaccinated.
At the present rate where we are now, have y'all figured out where we will be in the fall?
Tough to say. There's a couple of things still in play. It's not clear yet how much adolescent vaccinations are gonna increase. Moderna actually applied today to formally apply to the FDA to extend their emergency use authorization, similar to how Pfizer did, going down to 12. And there are studies ongoing for kids as young as 2. So I don't know how that's going to change for the remaining adults who are eligible but have not yet chosen to get vaccinated. It's really, really tough to say. I think that number continues to go up. We're certainly not trying to benchmark anything against it. I mean, really, at the end of the day, what matters is what the virus is doing. And just like the entirety of this pandemic, should cases go up, should the hospitals become threatened again, we would need to institute more restrictions. If that doesn't happen, we probably won't have to. But it really depends on what the virus is doing. It's really hard to predict at this point what's going to happen then.
I ask that, in consideration of the backdrop of the hope that we have Jazz Fest, French Quarter Fest, obviously Saints football's coming back, so many different activities that a lot of people are just really looking forward to.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I did see that.
You're in that number, Doc.
Yeah, absolutely. I did see that Voodoo Fest canceled today. I don't particularly think it was due to restrictions, but I don't really know. I think we'll be able to do those events safely. That's not a guarantee. And the caveat, the hesitancy in my voice is because, look, this virus has been unpredictable, and we're going into few months of really hot weather down here, which has the same effects for us in terms of viral transmission as cold weather does up north. It drives people indoors. When people go indoors, it's easy to transmit the virus. So we're at some liability to have increased transmission in the summer. I hope that we have enough base of vaccinations out there to prevent against the surge because of that. I really don't know. It's almost like a real-time experiment. If cases stay the way they are now, I think it's going to be safe to have those big events, and I'm looking forward to that myself a lot. But again, if cases go back up, we're going to have to be prepared to make adjustments, just like we unfortunately have done this whole ordeal.
You know, there's so much information and misinformation out there, and I'll say uncertain information, because I don't know whether it's true, not true, or otherwise. In fact, just the other day, Dr. Marty McCarry from Johns Hopkins says that 80 to 85% of U.S. adults are immune to COVID as a result of a natural immunity. And, you know, so when you have that out there, you know, and we're trying to promote vaccines, I mean, it seems like we have these, we're at cross purposes, it seems like, with a lot of, I don't want to say it's science because I don't know what it's based on, you know, but all these these mixed messaging going on all at the same time.
Yeah, it's a constant game of whack-a-mole. And there was this video has gone viral of this doc and osteopathic doc in Ohio a couple of days ago testifying against their state legislature. And she was saying all types of stuff. Interaction with 5G cell towers and spoons and magnets sticking to people's foreheads and just a bunch of wacko stuff. And there's a lot of it out there. And, you know, the social media.
And, you know, and let me stop you right there just because I want the public to understand this. These people are getting clicks, right? And they're making money. And I read a series of articles because I wanted to move to this on the flip side of this, but you brought it up, so we'll discuss it now. they're spreading these vaccine fears, and they're making millions.
Yeah.
I mean, they're perpetuating these urban myths and meanwhile lining their pockets with millions of dollars being made. And it's almost the wackier the messaging that they can put out there, the more money they make. I mean, it's the damnedest thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I was reading this article the other day, and it was like shaking my head saying, what on earth? What's going on here? I can't believe. What they were saying and what people were believing, it's like, this is crazy.
It's crazy. And there's been some work that has shown that some overwhelming percentage of all these misleading social media posts were tied back to like 5 or 6 individuals. That's it. A number of which have a financial stake in this. It really is mind-blowing, particularly when, I would never fault someone for falling victim because it's so pervasive and it's difficult and everything has been so confusing and people want to think things are going to be okay or it plays into other suspicions. It really is an exercise in preying on vulnerable people who this has been a challenging year, and I would never fault anyone for falling victim to these myths, but the the charlatans that are pushing these, I mean, they are just doing a real disservice to society because they're making us weak. They're causing people to have these really unfounded concerns and really poisoning the well on this. And it's going to be something that we're going to have to address. There's a real anti-science, sentiment that's really fed by deliberate misinformation like this, and it's going to take a real concerted effort to combat it. I'm really, really worried about it. I think once we get over COVID, we're going to have to really address how we parse through scientific information and how we make sure that people get factual information from messengers that they trust. That's going to be the important thing.
Yeah, I mean, I started and tend to worry about this because I'm very worried about us plateauing here in New Orleans, because I just think in listening to you and listening to others that we increase our probabilities of having another spike. I don't want to play doom and gloom guy, but I just think the probabilities are going up every day that we don't have a steeper curve line on this vaccine thing that we're going to be paying the piper at some point in time in the near future. It may be September, it may be October, it may be November, I don't know. But I think it's coming.
I agree. I have the same concern. And in my mind, I equate it to routinely driving around without a seatbelt on. You'd probably be fine, until you're not. And then it's too late. And I think, clearly, God forbid, if we were in another surge and hospitals got real busy and we had to really lock things down again, it would be a no-brainer at that point that we should do more vaccinations. But we need to be smart enough to do that now so that we can actually prevent that.
All right, we're going to take a break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Want to hear from you. Stay with us. We're visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, the state health officer for the state of Louisiana. We will be right back. We're back with Dr. Joe Cantor, state health officer for the state of Louisiana. We've got a couple of callers. We'll get to them in just a second. Doc, I wanted to ask you a question about the requirement of having a vaccine in order to go to work. In Houston, a Houston-based hospital system just recently suspended 178 hospital workers for not complying with their vaccination policy. Is that being contemplated here in the state relative to healthcare facilities?
Not on a statewide level. I guarantee you every hospital administrator in the country is paying attention to this story. I don't anticipate any statewide mandates here. I don't anticipate any federal mandates either. I'll tell you what happens a lot of time in hospitals is all types of vaccines are required. And then for seasonal vaccines like the flu vaccine, most hospitals will have a policy where their employees are required to either get the flu vaccine every year or if not, wear a mask. You know, this is before COVID when it was not that common to wear a mask. So I would imagine myself that once these vaccines, once the COVID vaccines get full FDA approval, and as of now, only Pfizer has actually submitted formally to the FDA for that. It's going to take the FDA a couple months to go through those documents. But, you know, within the fall, I think we'll start seeing these vaccines get full approval. I would imagine that more hospitals and other sensitive employers might be taking that step. I don't see it in Louisiana happening as a result of any statewide mandate. But from what I understand, from what I've read from the feds, they've been fairly clear that some employers, depending on how vaccination would affect the business, you know, meaning the ability to provide care safely to vulnerable patients, would be within their right to do that. I'm sure these are going to be challenged in court. I'm certain about that. I'd be interested to see how it plays out. But there is a lot of precedent going back decades for the right for certain vaccines to be required in certain settings if there's a plausible case of why they were conferred benefit to the establishment.
Yeah, I mean, at first blush, it would just seem to me if you're a physician that specializes in geriatric care, that's a nexus that even a layperson could make relatively easy in a court of law. I mean, I wouldn't have to do much research on that one, would I?
Geriatric care, oncology, where patients are immunosuppressed, all types of areas. And, I mean, even the thing is, you know, before, let's say, you actually get to those specialty areas, you pass through an emergency department typically where you haven't yet received a formal diagnosis, but you could have the same condition. So the logic extends a lot of places. And that's really why, you know, why hospitals are so strict about the flu vaccine, because at the end of the day, there's good data. I mean, years and years of data now that shows when hospitals are strict with their employees getting flu vaccine, there's less cases of hospital-transmitted flu, which means lives are saved. So there's probably going to be more data like that coming out with COVID, and I think people are going to be following the hospital in Houston very closely. I'll tell you from a medical perspective, there is absolutely no controversy here. From a medical perspective, care is provided in a more safer environment if the care providers are vaccinated. There's absolutely no question about that. How that gets implemented in terms of, you know, HR and employee policies, that's a different story.
We have begun to see a lot more of the Indian variant around the country. Some areas heightened alert. What are we seeing here?
5 cases identified throughout the state, presumably much more. Again, we don't sequence a lot of viral samples in this country. Not enough. We need to be doing more. So when you have 5 cases identified, like we do in Louisiana, there's no question it means you have a lot more. And I know for certain 4 of those 5 cases are individuals who, number one, were not vaccinated themselves, but also did not travel recently outside of the state, which means they presumably got the variant from in-state. A little bit of confusion that I'd like to clear up for folks. The WHO is now referring to one particular subtype of the India variant as the Delta variant.
So people are
going to see in the news now talk about the Delta variant. That's the India variant. It's B1617.2. And what the WHO is trying to do is they're trying to move away from labeling these variants by their country of origin because it can be stigmatizing. So they've assigned Greek letters to all the variants, and Delta is the one assigned to this particular type of the India variant.
Right. Still pretty contagious as it presents mm-hmm. itself?
Yeah, it's found to be more contagious than the normal type and also more contagious than the B117 or the UK variant, which is now being called the Alpha variant. We think it's a little bit more virulent, meaning it's a little bit more likely to get people sick. The UK, which you know, was on the leading edge of that UK variant, obviously. Now about 60% of the cases in the UK are due to this India variant, this Delta variant. So the good news here is the vaccines continue to confer good protection. A notable difference here is for this variant, for the Delta variant, for the India variant, you really need two doses of the vaccine before you get adequate protection. One dose, for example, one dose of the Pfizer, this is based on a study from a couple of weeks ago, one dose of the Pfizer vaccine only gives about 33% protection for this variant. Two doses gives between 80 and 90% protection. So you really do need two doses. And for anyone out there that is wavering on getting their second dose or completing their series, this is a great example about why that's so important.
Let's go to Lisa on line one. Lisa, you're on with Dr. Joe Cantor.
Yes. I had a question. My daughter-in-law refused to get the Moderna because they said there were reports about it affecting women's reproduction. And also, a lot of the problem I see with the lack of people getting the vaccine is because of all the uproar between Fauci and the CDC and everything else. People just do not trust the government because of all the various things that have happened with the actual course of our treatment of COVID. And one thing was said, I thought a wise thing would have been to say, we just don't know. And until we do, we advise this. But I wonder, when you see stuff on the internet and on Facebook, some of the stuff like that sounds plausible. I'm not talking about the crazy stuff like they're implanting something in your brain, they're going to trace you, okay? That's stupid as a stupid does. But some of the stuff sounds plausible. They've heard problems with blood clots, problems with myocarditis in some people that got the vaccine. Can you address that and exactly what the instance is of those things or whether there's any evidence that it is causing the vaccine? Because they're saying it could have been or it couldn't have been. It could have been coincidental.
Yeah. Doc, let's cover infertility. Let's cover fertility first. And you know that,
that's an urban myth.
What I'm able to do.
A big one. And Lisa, I'm appreciative to you for bringing this up. That's probably the most pervasive myth, the most damaging myth that's out there. It's really caused a lot of harm and caused a lot of hesitancy when it doesn't need to. There's absolutely no evidence, zero evidence suggesting that any of these vaccines, Moderna or the other two, affect fertility or impair the reproductive cycle. I really don't know how this myth got started, but it's kind of taken off, and it is really unfortunate because I think a lot of people, sounds like your daughter included, have kind of fallen victim to this when there's absolutely, absolutely no data behind it. I'm not just telling you, you know, from a scientist. I'll share personally that, you know, my wife and I are expecting another child, and she received the Moderna vaccine through the course of this pregnancy. Obviously, it did fine. A lot of women can share similar stories. There's really, really no data behind that at all. And I wish I could put that genie back in the bottle. So the more that folks can talk to docs and see there's no data behind it, I think that'd be better. I will say this, you know, to the other point you made, there have been some conditions that have arisen. You're absolutely right. There was an issue with clotting for the J&J. There's an issue with myocarditis in some young individuals, generally mild cases of myocarditis that self-resolve. But the important thing to note here, what stands out in my mind, is that the FDA and the CDC have been immediately transparent with this, almost to a fault because it caused some more hesitancy. But once they started seeing evidence of this, a possible signal, they raised the flag, they rang the bell, they made it well known, and that should make people trust the process. There has been absolutely no signal about this fertility myth. It's just a myth, and women should really feel comfortable getting the vaccine. The facts are COVID itself is much more detrimental to a pregnancy than the vaccine is. COVID can cause preterm labor, it can cause miscarriage, stillbirth, and it can cause maternal complications. So I would encourage anyone, particularly women of childbearing age, to get the vaccine.
Do you see my point, though, Doctor? All the controversies,
yeah, absolutely.
One thing, it has been so politicized, and people don't trust the government. I mean, it's been so politicized that it's causing people to believe these things that maybe sound plausible, but they're really not. But people are so scared and have been so scared of it that they figure, okay, I don't want one more thing that I'd have to deal with.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And it's been challenging. I think the more that we can encourage people to get information on this from their doctors and not from Facebook, the better. There's, as you eloquently point out, Lisa, there's a lot of myths out there, and it can be really hard for someone out there in the community to parse through what is true and not. And it really takes talking to someone that has expert knowledge, like their doctor, to help with that.
Yeah, look, I make it a business not to talk about stories on Facebook, on Twitter, without doing the research and going and finding the real story behind that alleged story that they're referring to. If I don't see it, I don't talk about it. I'll pass on it because I just don't take it, you know, and give it full faith and credit and roll with it when I see it on Facebook or Twitter. Just don't.
Yeah.
I don't trust it, you know. And unfortunately, those that
really
are younger than me, they fully embrace it.
Right. There's no question. And it pains me when some people – look, there's a lot of mistrust of government out there, and I get that. And a lot of times it's for very good reason, but don't let that jeopardize your own health. You know, don't fall victim to these health myths when it's going to be you or your family that suffers the consequences.
Yeah, I mean, we've conflated a lot of this for the purposes in politicization of these issues, and there's a lot of blame to go around on both sides, and whether that is in an overt way or a covert way, and and sometimes covert can be just as damaging to overt by hiding things as opposed to revealing things, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. The problem is that don't throw the baby out with the bathwater and you know, having mistrust of the government, being concerned, even being a deeply political person or partisan is one thing, but don't let that impact decisions that are going to affect your health or affect your family's health.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about this weeks on end about how frustrating this is, and we just talked about it again and hitting this plateau relative to vaccines. I mean, we were rocking along, really hitting the ball out of the park there for a while, and all of a sudden we've almost just come to a screeching halt, and it's concerning. It really is, you know, because
we
live in a state that we have a lot of folks with a lot of comorbidities, and you know, and at some point in time we're going to pay the piper.
Yeah, I think you're right. We're a vulnerable state. We have a lot of comorbidities, puts us at liability. And yeah, look, if you don't trust the talking heads, if you don't trust government agencies, if you don't trust me, that's fine. But seek out someone who you do trust to get good information. And it might be your doctor, it might be a professor or someone else. But seek out that information. Do your own research. Don't just follow some of these myths, which can be damaging. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We will be right back, folks, with Dr. Joe Cantor. Stay with us. We're back with Dr. Joe Cantor, State Health Officer for the state of Louisiana. We'll go back to the talk lines. Rosemary, you're on with Dr. Joe Cantor.
Hi, guys. This is Rosemary. I've been on several times before. You can call me the comorbidity queen. Okay. because I've had, I have rheumatoid arthritis. I've got the asthma, pretty bad asthma lately, and prediabetes. But I wanted to give you a quick update about my knee replacement. I had it at the very end of March. It was a complete knee replacement. Phenomenal recovery. Finished PT in less than 8 weeks.
Congratulations.
I mean, that was great. And Dr. Cantor, I'm so glad you had a chance to take a vacation. I sure hope I can get one this year. Who knows with everything going on. I'm glad you talked about the Delta variant. I am concerned about that. because it seems to be a lot more virulent than the others and extremely more contagious. But those of us who have been vaccinated, I've been completely vaccinated. And not only that, I've been tested for the antibodies for the vaccine, and I'm positive for the antibodies for the vaccine. Should a booster help with this particular variant?
Potentially. And I'm glad you called back in, Rosemary. It's nice to talk to you again. I'm glad the procedure went well. That's really great news. Yeah, a booster will likely help. All the major vaccine manufacturers are looking, investigating the use of boosters now. It's probably going to be a thing that gets recommended maybe in a year or two. And the hope is that much like the annual flu vaccine is targeted to whatever types of the flu, varieties of the flu are prevalent or predicted to be prevalent that year, that these boosters could be honed in on whatever variants are of concern. And with the mRNA vaccines, it's easier to do that. So that's the hope. I share your concern about the Delta or the India variant. A couple of things on my mind. One, the longer that it takes for us to get a larger percentage vaccinated, the more these variants are going to emerge until you really stomp out the fire, so to say. But I am encouraged that there's going to be more attention to giving vaccines to the rest of the world as they become available. I saw there was the announcement yesterday that 500 million doses of Pfizer are going to be purchased and given internationally. That's important because the same logic holds true for other countries. The longer that other countries are unvaccinated, the more new variants have a chance to emerge that clearly threaten our safety as well. So that's encouraging news to me.
Good. Now that I've been fully vaccinated and I actually feel like I can actually leave my house, I've gone to a restaurant already. I'm just so excited. Can I fly? Is it safe for me to fly? I haven't seen my son and grandson in San Francisco all this time. Would it be safe for me to fly? Because I know you have to wear a mask when you fly. And since I normally would get a nonstop flight, which is about 4.5 to 5 hours to San Francisco, is that practical? Is that something I should look at? Or
I think now that you're fully vaccinated, and for listeners, fully vaccinated means that you're at least 14 days out from completing the series. Now that you're fully vaccinated, I do think it's safe to fly. I would hope that the people you're visiting, your family, would also be vaccinated if they're eligible. That would increase the safety. But I do. I mean, after being at home for so long, I think now that you're fully vaccinated, it's the time to do that.
Rosemary, thank you so much for the call. Good luck. Hope you get to visit your family out in San Francisco. And Dr. Cantor, thank you again. Welcome back. Hopefully you don't have to wait another year and a half before your next vacation.
Thanks, Noah. I appreciate that. Nice to talk to you.
Yes, and we appreciate you joining us every week. Thank you again, sir.
Thank you, Noah. My pleasure.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.